This is the morning brief from the Economic Times.
On Tuesday, the 1st of February, India's Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman presented Budget 2022. Now, the fiscal budget, the central government's revenues, earnings, expenditure, and debt, basically its annual balance sheet and estimated financial activity for next year, decides many things. The way the country spends, earns, grows, manufactures, transports, invests, purchases, and borrows. It determines what will become cheaper or more expensive, which businesses are lucrative to grow or invest in, and which ones a company or investor should exit. It tells you whether your income will increase in real terms or recede, where you should park your money to gain the maximum out of it, and where you should quickly withdraw it from. And this year's budget was especially critical. What were the companies you track expecting, Devina?
Oh, a lot, Anirban. I mean, this budget comes just as the economy is starting to grow after being battered by COVID-19 pandemic for about 2 years. So I track the telecom sector, as you know, and mobile phone and laptop makers have been especially hit by a range of problems. Low supply of components, leading to high input costs, leading to low margins and losses. And it's not just my sector. None of us, and I repeat, none of us are out of the woods yet. Manufacturing, for instance, has slowed down. Companies aren't spending on expansion. Job creation is really lagging by as much as 200 million. We are in the middle of the third wave and there are fears of more waves coming in. Inflation is high and difficult to control without disturbing growth. There is a problem of yawning fiscal deficit. In other words, the government is constantly spending more than it's earning.
So, well, did the budget address all these issues? What were the initial reactions you got?
Well, I'll call it mixed. You know, the budget steered clear of big ticket announcements like massive tax cuts and subsidies or handouts to the poor. That, according to many, was brave, especially considering that elections are coming up in 5 states. And considering the government is already overspending. With the upcoming polls, it could easily have been lured to be populist and dole out freebies. Well, it didn't. People also praised the government's big increase in capital expenditure and massive push on infrastructure spending. Because after all, the logic is that if the government boosts spending, the companies should and are expected to follow, correct?
Yep, but there was criticism also. Like, this was possibly the least number-heavy budget in many recent years. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but it left a lot unsaid, right? Like, we were left clueless about what the government plans to do about jobs or health or, for instance, sectors that are worst hit by the pandemic, like aviation or automobiles. Many weren't convinced about the growth projections and the relative estimates for inflation. Also, what about the government's massive plans for selling its assets? Are they going as well as they should? Perhaps not. And then, what caused the biggest stir and a huge meme fest on social media was this.
It's a move that is being hailed by many as one that legitimizes cryptocurrency and other digital assets like non-fungible tokens. Let's talk about the big announcement in Budget 2022. Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman saying that crypto assets, the gains on crypto assets, will be taxed at 30%.
In this episode, we try to break down the budget and where the government is trying to steer the country, its industries, and most importantly, its people. Above all, we try to answer the one question which is always in everyone's minds. What is in this budget for you and for me? I'm Devina Sengupta.
And I'm Anirban Chaudhary. We are your hosts for today. It's the 3rd of February and you're listening to The Morning Brief. We are calling this episode The Budget Brief. Our guests in this episode are two of the best people to break this budget down for you. The first is one of the most prominent voices on the Indian economy. The other has tracked it and the finance ministry for years and encapsulated the most critical and complex decisions for ET's readers. Swaminathan Iyer, consulting editor for The Economic Times, and Vinay Pandey, resident editor North at The Economic Times. Mr. Iyer, in a blog post 2 weeks back, you had predicted this budget would be an election budget, as much as last year's budget had been an economist's budget. So does that assessment of yours still stand?
No, I was dead wrong. And it's not the only election forecast that I've got wrong. But here I was wrong. I'm very happy that it's not an election budget. It does not go out of its way to say there will be a 25 freebies for 25 different vote banks. That is not what it's about. I have always said that the truth is that election budgets and freebies don't win elections. It appears that Nirmala Sitharaman agrees with me, and I agree with her. This one attempts to say this is going to be a growth-oriented budget. We are not going to rely on freebies to different people. We are going to rely on rapid growth, which will then solve a myriad problems for a myriad different vote banks. So that is the way we are going to go. That's the way they've gone. It's a dangerous gamble because in the process, you have an extremely high fiscal deficit and you're going to be risking inflation. And if you really get very high inflation, it can really destroy many of the budgetary assumptions. But she's taken a courageous gamble, and in her place, I would have done the same.
Vinay, what do you think of this budget?
See, I think the message that comes across clearly is that this is a continuity budget. I think where we are faltering a bit is we assume and expect too much from the budget. If the government has laid out a plan, long-term plan of, let's say, 3, 4, 5 years, and is working on that plan, then there is not much scope for budget to do much in that sense. Let's take a infrastructure plan. If the PM Gati Shakti plan, which has been announced for a while, is rolling and is in the works, then the budget really can't do much. It is just allocating resources and working on the margin to address issues that may have arisen over the years. So I see it as a continuity budget, and the fact that it hasn't really tinkered with the plan is actually a good sign that you have thought through some things and you're working on those things.
Mr. Iyer, when you talk about growth, is there enough, for instance, to spur rural growth? And when you say when inflation is high, she's been courageous, is there also enough cash that is going into the hands of the people? I mean, basically, what is in the budget for the Aam Aadmi?
If you have a total fiscal deficit of 6.4 and you're allowing the states another 4, please, that is an enormous fiscal deficit. That is an enormous amount of money that's going out to the hands of people. Please, let's not think that the only thing that goes into the hands of people is what is announced as a new budget measure. So the idea that the budget single-handed can spur agriculture or spur education, I mean, that is just nonsense. The budget is a small part of the total government. It can, at the margin, provide a little more incentive here, a little more disincentive there. But it is not the beginning and end of economic policy or of funding. If you have had GDP growth of almost, say, 9% growth this year, and if you're going to have another 8.5% next year, I mean, that amount of growth is going to put purchasing power in the hands of pretty well everybody. Very few people will be left out altogether if you have 2 years of such high growth. It is, of course, true that doing it through the investment route is more indirect than just giving it away in feeding programs and NREGA programs. It's true. But many of those programs are going to continue.
But haven't the provisions for NREGA and PM Kisan been slightly cut in this budget? Vinay, I'd like you to come in here.
So, like, NREGA is on-demand scheme, right? So if there is more demand for work, the government is legally bound to provide that money. That is why you see in supplementary demands, there is always more allocation to NREGA. Now, if you understand that the economy is going to revive, jobs are going to come back, then the NREGA's demand is going to be less. But should the demand arise, government is legally bound to provide that employment. So that's why it's not something that is under budgeted. If there is need, government will provide those funds.
Vinay, you mentioned to Anirban earlier that The government cannot be the only one spending, of course, and the private sector is expected to put in its investments. If I look at the rough numbers, we have seen a huge growth of about 35% in the government's estimated capital expenditure. Do you think the government spending more in, let's say, the Gati Shakti, the PLI schemes, will that also encourage the private sector to spend more?
Yes, there has been a step up in capital expenditure. If you see, the share of capital expenditure and total expenditure has been rising. Now, a lot of this investment is probably going towards infrastructure, PM Gati Shakti and all. Now, infrastructure will pull in some private investment to the extent there is somebody who's providing capital goods, somebody is providing EPC, somebody is providing consultancy. To that extent, somebody is doing the contract execution. So it will obviously pull in private sector. But the indirect benefit is that it makes the economy more efficient to the extent that if, let's say, private sector investment starts to pick up, the government will probably pull back because you also need to correct the fiscal situation. So it's kind of a filling in the gap also till the time private sector steps in to start investing.
Vinay, when you talk of fiscal deficits, what do you think of the government's estimate of 6.4% and going by the fact that it wants to achieve 4.5% by 2025. Do you think it is on the right path?
See, the fiscal deficit step up happened because of the pandemic. You were forced to spend more to correct both on the capital side and on the revenue side while your revenue tanked. Now, going forward, what is going to happen is that if the economy recovers, you will not have this huge need of government support so much. So like you have spent so much on food subsidy because you gave free ration. You would not need such a big capex. On the other hand, if the economy recovers, then your revenues are going to get a much bigger boost, right? So your expenditure growth is likely to be slower and your revenue growth is going to be much higher. So I think that fiscal deficit may not be 4.5 or whatever, it could be off by a bit, but I expect a sharper fiscal correction going ahead, because slower expenditure growth and a sharper rise in revenues.
So Vinay, coming to revenue expenditure growth, what I read was that it's muted and below 1%. This is because of lower subsidies on fertilizer, food, petroleum, etc. Is that worrisome, and will fuel therefore have the propensity to get costlier?
I think the biggest risk to the budget estimates is actually from the subsidy side, to the extent that if you have a higher crude and if you have higher commodity prices, then spill over to your fertilizer subsidy, which spill over to your fuel subsidy. So that is obviously, and even if food prices continue to rise. So these are the risks, and there is not much saving to be had elsewhere unless you start to cut the capex. But on the other side, there is a conservatism on the revenue side. Let's say if the LIC IPO doesn't happen this year, it happens next year, then you are getting extra 1 lakh crore. Plus the revenue assumption is 9.6% taxes growth on a nominal GDP growth of 11%. You would expect the revenue growth to be slightly higher. So that risk is there on the expenditure side, but I think the conservatism on the revenue side gives you the room that even if there is a spike, it could be covered.
So fiscal performance may not be so badly impacted, but we have to remember another aspect. Global crude oil prices continue to rise, and a slashing of subsidies on fertilizers and fuel means the government is not bearing the impact of that cost. So expect more price hikes on fuel, diesel, and food items.
Mr. Iyer,
one thing that everybody is pointing out is disinvestment target. Now, the disinvestment target has been slashed, and the markets for sure were looking forward to the LIC IPO and its planning. So how does that impact now? And are we seeing a slowdown in privatization going ahead? Will Air India be like the last significant win of the government over the next couple of years? And what about BPCL, Concord? Even they were on the agenda, right?
I congratulated Sitaraman on courage on the spending side. I have to say that she's guilty of cowardice on the privatization side. There was a target of 1.75 lakh crores. The actual amount that they are now projecting is only 78,000 crores. And instead of fixing that next year, it's going to be lowered even further to 68,000 crores. Now, the real question that should be asked is, when you had this target of 1,78,000, why didn't you get it through? It appears that Sitaraman is throwing up her hands in despair and saying, okay, I will just cut next year to 68,000 crores, with no explanation as to why the performance was so dismal this year. Now, the LIC IPO alone was supposed to fetch 100,000 crores. Excuse me, what has happened to the money from the LIC IPO? Is there some proposal to pull it or put it on ice? No, I don't think so, because Sitaraman referred to it. But the math just does not add up. Now, last year, you know, she had talked about selling old assets like power plants, roads, railways, ports, selling this and creating a national monetization pipeline of 6 lakh crores, which would then become available for fresh investment. Because she realized fresh investment can't just keep coming from more taxation. You need to do it by selling the old assets. But if the sale of assets has been such a pathetic failure, why has she not said one word about it? And please, let us not pretend that you're going to have some revenue buoyancy this year because we are still in the COVID period. But once you get beyond there, if you want to have investment-led growth, you need funds from sale of old assets. If you cannot do that, then the entire approach is doomed. So as I said, there is very, very serious concern about the fact that privatization and asset sales have done so badly.
Vinay, one on the government's sort of protectionist attitude and the thought that increasing import tariffs will somehow spur domestic production and demand. And we see that customs duties are expected to rise as estimated receipts show an increase. Has this worked for us yet? And where will this attitude really take us?
So I think that is the valid argument that does this help. So there have been experts who have argued that, look, in for a short time, you can give it a try, that you can have these duties for 2-3 years. And if they engender business environment and they create investments that is competitive, good enough. If it doesn't, then you should be rolling back. So maybe there is a case for trying this for a while and through other incentives as well, PLIs and all. You're trying to create an ecosystem where at least some people invest and see if this is viable or not viable. So it cannot be a long-term strategy that you have high tariffs, because we have been through that and we know what the cost and consequences are that. If you create a high cost economy, then to the extent that certain items take up more of your expenditure, you are allocating less to other side, and there'll be demand will fall for those. If mobile phone get expensive and you have to spend more on that, then obviously you'll cut spending on something else. So to that extent, that part of the economy will suffer.
Mr. Iyer, coming to you on crypto. The government's stance has been somewhat confusing. I mean, while there is no law on cryptocurrencies yet, there is high taxation now. In fact, someone told me that at 30%, it will be taxed at par with gambling. Is the government being too harsh?
Well, not at all. I mean, I firmly believe that crypto is partly a con game and partly a mafia game. It's a con game because I think lots of people who got Bitcoin and others are ultimately going to lose their pants. Because share is an asset which has no real meaning. Some people say, it's a kind of digital gold and it's inflation proof and people will pile in. I'm sorry, what I see is that people are piling just out of sheer speculation. It's part of the same thing as what you're getting in the tokens, the non-fungible tokens. There are all kinds of crazy con games, all kinds of schemes of this kind. And to my mind, the cryptocurrencies belong to that. They are called cryptocurrencies, but it's ridiculous to call them currency. I mean, look at the huge variations in value. Can I go into a shop and pay in this kind of thing? Of course you can't. So, you know, these are highly speculative vehicles. They are possible vehicles of tax evasion. To prevent the tax evasion, that 30% tax has been put. That if instead of paying in cash, you pay in Bitcoin, you can't avoid capital gains tax. So it's been brought on online out there. At the same time, the government says we are going to go for a digital rupee. Right. I think this RBI line generally has been that we don't want cryptocurrencies, but we will have a digital rupee to take advantage of blockchain and the positive characteristics of that.
Vinay, what's your take?
I think, you may be right there. that if every asset, every income is taxed at your marginal rate of tax, why should crypto be taxed at 30%? So I think the steep taxation is also kind of discouraging the way investment in crypto, that we are going to tax it at 30%. But to the extent that there was a clarity needed on how this asset is going to be taxed, the budget has provided that clarity. And they are still saying that this taxation doesn't mean that we have decided in favor of crypto. So that, at least from the government side, that is very clear that, look, that overhang on whether crypto will be allowed or not is still continues.
Mr. Iyer, coming to the subject of personal taxation, now the government's attitude seems to be that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. There have been no changes in the personal tax slabs. How do you see that?
Well, as far as the no changes in the tax slabs or income tax, I think that's very sensible. There's already been too much populism. I already think that the exemptions are too many. There are various other countries where the exemption limit tends to be equal to the per capita income. And India, it's 2 to 3 times as much. So we have, because populism within a democracy, we have been given far too many breaks in the past. And I'm very glad that they have stood firm on this particular occasion.
Right. But when you talk about inequality, it's a reality, right? And it has, by many accounts, become much starker in the last 2 years of the pandemic.
The plain and simple fact is that if you have an enormous stimulus, economic stimulus, in order to give people jobs, in order to relieve distress, that same huge stimulus is going to send the stock market up. So the idea that the interests of the rich and the poor are opposed is false. What you try to do to improve the prospects of the poor also help the rich. So let's not pretend that the interests of the two are totally opposed. The plain and simple fact is that in every stock market boom, inequalities increase because the stock market raises wealth much more than the wages. And if you have, on the other hand, a big recession or a big depression, then the stock market falls and therefore inequality decreases. But although inequality decreases in a recession, are the poor people happy? No, they are not. Because at the end of it all, while intellectuals seem to be very, very worried about inequality, as far as the ordinary person is concerned, he wants a better life. If you say, I will reduce you by 10% and reduce Ambani by 40%, this will be of no comfort to the people whatsoever. So as I said, as long as most people are better off, the issue of inequality, I think, will remain largely at the intellectual level. If it gets to the stage where people say Ambani is getting richer because I am getting poorer, then immediately action would be taken. If it is seen that the rich are getting rich because the poor are getting poorer, then there would be a huge political movement. Now, that is factually not the case, and voters do not see it that way.
Like with all fiscal budgets, a lot will be revealed in the coming quarters. Come monsoons, people who lost umbrellas at local trains or metros last year will suddenly find they are much more expensive this time around. The parents of differently abled children will hear good news from their insurers. Solar power companies will be happy, while crypto investors and sellers may have to grapple with strange challenges.
Right. And on a broader level, we will see whether the government that hasn't gone all out on spending this year does so next year, going by the huge projected increase in capex. If companies follow suit, jobs will be created and real growth will happen. We will also see which way inflation jumps and whether borrowing becomes more expensive, something that hasn't happened yet. Before that, of course, we will see how the ruling party fares in the upcoming state elections. And while the government has been brave in its budget this year, it may be more eager to please next year, as the year after that, 2024, is the bigger game, the general elections. I will quote from the same epic as the finance minister did in her budget speech. As the blind king Dhritarashtra said in the Mahabharata, men lose good judgment in things which concern their interest. One hopes that doesn't continue to be the case with this government. Thank you, Mr. Iyer. Thank you, Vinay. You are listening to The Morning Brief with me, Anirban Chaudhary, and my colleague, Devina Sengupta. This episode was called The Budget Brief. Producers, my colleague Nehal Chalyawala and Sondarya Jayachandran from Awaaz. Sound editor, Swati Joshi from Awaaz. Executive producer, Arijit Barman.
Do write to us at themorningbrief@timesgroup.com. The Morning Brief airs every Tuesday, Thursday and Friday. Thank you for listening in and have a good day. All clips used in this episode belong to their respective owners. Credits are given in the description.